I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
For as long as any of us can remember, there's always been this notion that we should work hard, that working hard, working long hours was a badge of honor, that we were always rewarded for going the extra mile. The productivity and sales that we would create would be our pats on the back. So working hard, working long hours has been part of our national DNA, our national mindset for a long, long time. Yet on the other side of this working hard paradigm is the idea that maybe my own health, taking care of what I need, the boundaries that would make me balanced and secure and healthy, would go on the back burner. You can see this happening in companies and organizations for a long time. Then the pandemic hit, and we started to find that we have to be flexible in where we work and how we work. Many of us had to work from home for the first time. We got fatigued with all the kinds of decisions we had to make. And now we're beginning to explore coming back to some sort of blended work environment. Well, my next guest on the Business of Intuition is really an expert on this idea about health and creating the appropriate policies and decisions that will allow the individual employee, the team, and the organization take a new look at how we support the health of our employees and our cultures. Renee Schulte is an expert in this field, and she has over 20 years leadership experience in mental health as a therapist, policymaker, and consultant. Her work in the public and private sectors have given her a unique understanding of the policy complexities in this area. And she's nationally recognized in her expertise on behavior health policy, system design, and financial analysis and strategic consulting. A conversation with her was actually just quite reaffirming and also enlightening when it comes to this idea that the individual is a microcosm of the team and as the organization as a whole. And therefore, the organization as a whole is also a macrocosm of the individual. That maybe if we're really to learn from what this pandemic is here to teach us, it is this, that we need to be able to find more ways to connect and communicate with our employees. We need to be able to give our employees more voice into how they need to support their own health. And overall, organizations need to have a new approach by how we support health and our longevity within our companies, because health is going to be what keeps people in their jobs and helps the organization move forward in a positive way. Renee Schulte on the Business of Intuition. So Renee, it's great having you as a guest on the Business of Intuition. And I know that you are an expert in policy and in health. I think to get the ball rolling, what's your sort of state of the union, if you will, when it comes to health for employees in companies? A lot's happened over the last year and a half, 2 years. You got a lot of companies now trying to figure out how to have their employees come back to the home office and then how to balance that with virtual work. I've heard people say that there's 61% of all Americans right now could call themselves lonely. You know, so what's your sense? You know, you're the expert in this field. What is the state of the union with respect to employee health?
Yeah, we're really struggling. I want to first thank you for letting me be here today. I'm excited to have this conversation with you. We are struggling as a workforce. And so I have been working in our state with a grant from the federal government actually on workforce specifically for the past year during COVID. And so I really do have my finger on that pulse. And we are struggling in the workforce. And so there were a lot of folks that struggled being home that whole time. The alcohol and drug use of people in the workforce skyrocketed while we were home. And I don't know if a lot of folks have thought about that. And so there's a lot more being used because you were maybe not on video, not on screen. So people couldn't see that. You couldn't smell that on your partner. And so that was causing challenges. And now when it goes back into the workforce, we're struggling with what we're calling re-entry anxiety. People are really concerned about who's vaccinated, who's not, who's wearing a mask, who's not, who, you know, might get the variant and who doesn't, all of these different things that are out there. And so it's been a really tough season for workforce. And so I don't envy anybody in those positions trying to make these decisions because it's been really difficult.
And so what are your suggestions? And if I'm working for, let's say, a mid-sized organization, and I totally agree with what you just said, where do I start? How do we start to rebuild the health of our employees? And I know that's a huge question, but I'm sure people are wondering it.
Yeah, that's a really important question. So we really have to start with communication and really talking to our employees about what they want. What I see not working very well are the people that are insisting that everybody come back on a certain day. That's not working. And I also am seeing not working, everybody insisting everybody's going to be remote for the rest of their lives, also not working. And so what seems to be working a little bit better is having a conversation about a blend potentially, or a timeline in which you want to start moving people forward with an intention of why. There has to be a why behind, you know, some people were really good workers remote and they may not need to be in an office and we need to learn to respect that. Others might really need to be in the office. One group that we're seeing really struggling is actually that coming out of college, those younger workforce that usually find their social connection at work. Working remote has really left them disconnected. And I think that's where some of those talks about being more lonely is really coming from, is that group of folks that really used that part of their identity as how they connected with people. And so if you didn't have a lot of social support around you elsewhere and you lost work where you didn't get to talk around that water cooler, you're lonely.
Yeah. So are some of the things that you are helping organizations do, for lack of a better word, trying to come up with resilient programs, I mean, resiliency programs? And what are you finding as being those that are most successful? I mean, what's your star pupil, if you will, of a company that has taken this challenge on and done well with it?
Some of the companies that are doing well really are communicating and letting employees have a voice in what that looks like. And so, and they're like giving a timeline. My husband's part of a big aerospace company, and they started talking back in April or May about potentially coming to the office at some point in September. So it's like giving them three or four months to think about that, to process that. He can then go to the office so many times between those two points, but it's a more of an opportunity to, you know, kind of get the feet back wet and get back into the groove of going to the office. But I still think even when he's back full time, it'll probably be 3 days in an office and 2 days out, which was completely unheard of pre-pandemic. So I think it's wrong. The ones that are doing the worst are thinking we're going back to normal and that it will be the way it was pre-pandemic. That's just not a thing. And so we need to be able to have flexibility. And this is where intuition comes to play, because we need to be able to think about this situation. You have not been through a pandemic like you just went through since the Spanish flu in 1918. So it's not like we have a rule book to say this is what you do next.
So you mentioned the word intuition. What role do you think it plays in this discussion around health?
Well, with health, a person knows their physical health better than anybody else, right? And so when you're going to a doctor does the best they can do to diagnose you, but you have to be the advocate for you. Only you know the symptoms you have, and you have to trust that you know what's going on. So when you go into a doctor, if a doctor says, well, everything looks normal, but you know something's wrong, you have to continue to advocate for more help. Well, in the workplace and in health, you know what you need to be healthy. And so you may have to go against the grain. Maybe you need to wear a mask at work, or maybe you need to be more distanced at work and ask for those things. So you have to be the advocate as the worker. And then as the employer, you've got to realize that not everybody's going to be the same. And so not everybody's going to have the same response. We're not all at the same place in this pandemic or post-pandemic. Some people are still at the disillusionment stage of trying to come out of a pandemic. And some people think we've long passed it and we're all gone, but we're at different parts in the journey. So for an employer to really understand where their workers are, if they're feeling, you know, ready to come back, if they're feeling like they need space, they feel like they need masks, and trying to do the best that they can for those people and understanding there's going to be different people in different places, because both sides have to communicate. The worker's responsibility to advocate for themselves, employer to look at all different groups and see what they can do for everyone.
I get this. I mean, there's so much you just said that I could go off on for years, but there's so much about this giving employees this voice that you talked about, because nobody knows their own health better than yourself, and how that is so important now as we come back to some sort of response to COVID and trying to recreate our situations. I guess what I wonder about is the idea that voice of, I want to be able to communicate to somebody around my own situation. Okay, so if that's the case, there's got to be some courage to speak up on the individual to go against that which has been not yet accepted. And then on the other side, we have those who have currently the power, the executives, let's call them that, those people, those who are higher up the food chain, who very well might have this value that you describe. We want to have our employees participate in their own health and be engaged in helping make policies. And then I've got this other issue, Renee. I'm thinking, I got to get work done. I've got supply chain issues, and I've got 1,000 recs, you know, unfilled positions that we're trying to get into play. And I've got customers barking at us for things, whatever the particular company or service is. So in short, while I understand what you're saying is true, we need to be able to encourage people to share their voice more, but I'm also on time frames here. I'm on a crunch. And I got to tell you, I got to get this work done. Otherwise, we have no company to add people's voice. So long way of sort of navigating my way to this point. How do we do both?
That's a really good question. But here's the big key. If you don't and everybody leaves, then you've got yourself a bigger problem. So you've got to care for those people that you have, and they have to be healthy to stay in your company. Because if they get COVID again, they get a variant again, they get, you know, whatever it is, it just makes everything you have worse. So every time we turn over an employee, you know that costs so much more per employee to turn over and hire a new one. So you've got to start with, how do I shore up the base of what I've got to bring in more people? Because if your base is unhappy and they're super grouchy and just not going to work with you, bringing in new employees is just not going to make your day better. And so it is a lot of work, but it's really what's needed now. And I'm not saying to talk to people forever, but you just need to have some conversations and expectations sort of laid out in your guidelines. So if you're in leadership, lay out your plan that your decision is you think you're going to be back in the office by this date, this time. And for those people who struggle with that, let those people come to reach out to you. It doesn't have to be you have to talk to every single employee and get a pulse on every single one of them, but give them the opportunity. So maybe you have 1 or 2 days where you have an open door policy that during this time frame, come to us. If you've struggled, this is the assigned guy you're going to talk to about this. If you've got an issue with this, you know, but this is what our plan is. And then if you can't do this, come talk to us about why. And who knows what those regions could be. We've seen so many unique things come out of this, and people did find their voice during the pandemic. And that's what's kind of throwing people for a loop, because a lot of folks that just worked for, you know, that minimum, sub-minimum wage, maybe, you know, middle wage work before are going, I don't want to do that anymore. And so they're just leaving in droves. And so we've got to figure out a way how to incentivize them and come back, which is a challenge for everybody.
Yes. Yes. Okay. If you were to take a look at the individual as a microcosm of the team, and the team is a microcosm of the company. Mm-hmm. And you could also go backwards, that the company is almost like a macrocosm of the individual. And I see this sometimes, like, for example, we have some healthcare organizations that we deal with, and they are now really focusing on what you might call the patient experience, right?
Right.
It's not just whether you come in and we, you know, fix your broken bone, but it's what it's like to be in the hospital or the ambulatory clinic. You know, it's what's that interaction feel like, right? And I'm finding that there isn't quite that same level of conversation of what does it feel like? What's the experience like internally? What is the employee experience like? And in a way that, shouldn't we be doing both? Shouldn't we having as equal amount of conversation about employee experience as we are about patient experience? And this is just one example. So to leading up to my question, then, if it's all relative, right? We're going to get here kind of way out there. If it's all relative, what does the individual need to do? What do you recommend, like me or anybody, do, one person to take more charge of their health?
That's a great question. The biggest thing you can do right now for your personal health is sleep more. Because there is a ton of research out there that shows if you get less than 6 hours of sleep a night, you are three times more likely to get sick. Wow, and that was researched way before COVID. So less than 6 hours, three times more likely to get sick. And I teach self-care because I'm a mental health therapist by trade. That's what I do. But it doesn't do any good if you haven't slept. Because what we're finding in research is showing that without sleep and you're frustrated, you're exhausted, you make bad choices and your willpower goes down. And one of the pieces that's contributing to that during COVID more so than ever is decision fatigue. I don't know if you've ever heard of decision fatigue, but decision fatigue is something that they knew before COVID, but you made a lot more extra decisions during this last year of pandemic than you ever have before. So you still had all your everyday decisions about work and not, but then you started adding layers, you know, about the masks and the vaccinations and, you know, whether you wear the mask here or not there or see your family inside, outside, just all the things, right? And so when you make all those decisions at the end of the day, you're exhausted. What they found in the research shows that when you're tired and when you or hungry, which both deplete at the end of the day, your willpower is gone and you make bad choices. So for self-care, that means if you haven't worked out and you've made big decisions all day, you get home, you're not working out because your body's just like, I just am not. And then you don't eat well. So you may have the healthy meal planned, but then you order the pizza because you walked in the door and you're like, oh, this is such a day. And so it all stems on sleep. And sleep was pretty interrupted for most folks during COVID. And so trying to get back to a good sleep pattern, because when you sleep better, you think better, and then you can have that conversation that you need to have with somebody in a way that's productive. Because when you're grouchy, you're not really having that productive conversation. And that doesn't work so well at work.
That's great. So I got two things that came out of this that was sleep more and sort of that addresses or that kind of feeds into decision fatigue. So that's on the individual level. What's the corollary for a company? So if sleep more is for individual, what's the corollary for an organization?
Well, they really need to respect people's boundaries and time off and helping them figure out when they're off and when they're on. And so, you know, if you're the manager and you're the leader of the ship, but you're emailing people at 10 o'clock at night with urgent emails, you're not helping with that boundary either, nor are you setting the example. They know you're not sleeping because you're emailing at 10 p.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m. So you're not sleeping either. And so that doesn't work well. And so part of that is collectively having an understanding of when are we off, when are we on. And that all came prior to COVID with technology, phones were on 24/7 with our phone. But during COVID, because we all went remote, it got worse because then you're working in your house for the most part. My husband, who's worked in an office forever, sat upstairs for the last 18 months. And so he walks from his bedroom to the office. That's the commute. That's it. And so it's a lot more easy to just wander back into the office because it's right there, right? Where it used to take a drive to the office. And so it's merged home and business. And so from a leadership's perspective, if you know your folks need to rest, you need to help them give them permission to rest and to be off time at certain times. And that could be different times of the day if you're a shift worker or whatever, but we don't need to be everybody on call 24/7. It just doesn't work for anybody. It's not healthy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There's a book I remember reading a long time ago by a guy named Tony Schwartz called The Power of Full Engagement. And his interesting point was that when it comes to performance, if you study the industry that's really mastered that, which is professional athletic athletes, that what they do is that they honor this idea of boundaries when it comes to repair, or you might call it sleep in this case, that nobody continues to throw a 9-inning game in baseball and then do it again the next night, the next night, the next night. You always have people who are relief pitchers. There's always this honor towards the time to repair, the time to sleep, the time to rejuvenate. And then I would think, this is sort of the way I think about this, in addition to what you just said, also to time for reflection, time for looking back, time for lessons learned over the last few months, time for taking a breath and connecting people to progress and to acknowledge the work that they've done, because that is, in a sense, a way of relaxing and of taking a breath, you know, because we do have this mindset, this system, this overarching paradigm that we have to work to almost to exhaust you. And that's a badge of honor. If I find out that somebody, I can tell somebody I've worked 12 hours today, it's like, why do I feel like that's a good thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we do.
And that reminds me of another thing that leadership can do is make those spaces throughout the day, you know, bring back the old school water cooler where people can gather around and make it okay. Because if our workers really are lonely and it is their workplace where they're finding those connections, then they need connection points during the day. So whether that's a once a week or a lunch together or just the opportunity to stay after for like a happy hour occasionally or whatever that could look like, but having leadership, you know, sort of drive that conversation. I mean, they could all sign up to do a 5K together on a weekend, which is a healthy behavior, but something that they could all look forward to and do together. There's a lot of things that we can do from a health perspective, and it isn't necessarily that the leaders have to do more of it, but just making that opportunity there. And so if you've got a client, like I said, I work in mental health, and so like a lot of mental health professionals are just back-to-back clients. And they aren't healthy because of that's the schedule, the culture that they've built for themselves, trying to make other people healthy, which is kind of ironic and backwards, but that is sort of what we've got. And so you've got to change that culture in a way where you can get breaks, you know, to maybe step outside and see the sunshine, you know, rub water over your hands in the bathroom. So you kind of get a feel of tactile feel of something so that you can, you know, kind of take breaks between that heavy load. And so there's just a lot of different types of small things. It doesn't have to be big monumental stuff, but even doing that, if they started just having, you know, every so often they're going to have a lunch time when people could meet together and just put something like that on the calendar, the workforce sees that leadership cares about them reconnecting and getting back together. And it shows that whether they are there or not is not the point. The point is that you're doing something to engage that health component of your people. And it makes a difference.
What I'm getting in this conversation is that there is a system, a paradigm that got inflamed with COVID, but it was there before.
Absolutely, it was. Yes.
So there's many ways of dicing this down, but in one question I wanted to ask you is, why is it that those who are in the caring profession, you just mentioned healthcare workers, you mentioned mental care workers, why are they the last ones who receive the care?
A lot of that's our fault. We are helpers by trade, and we just give until there's nothing left to give, and that's on us. And so helping people will help anybody before themselves if they can. You can hear the stories. Doctors make the worst patients. Therapists make the worst clients. We're just, that's our bunch that we are. But what we have to do is just really remind ourselves that if we don't have anything to give, then we're not worth anything to our clients. And so we have to take a step back. And things that I tell the story all the time, but I had an awesome sleep schedule. Everything worked and I was clicking until COVID hit and then stuff went upside down. And it was just the difference of how that worked. I don't have a true understanding of it, but my body just reacted totally differently. So I had to go back on another journey of, okay, how do I get back to good sleep again? And so that happens in different seasons of people's lives. And so you have to have that as your goal, is to be like, okay, I want to make sure I stay healthy, because if I stay healthy, then I can see my clients, I can help my clients. You are right. Some of the most dysfunctional workplaces right now that have the highest stress people that are the people leaving from burnout in droves are in those healthcare spaces. And if we as healthcare workers don't, and leadership in that, don't start figuring out how to keep our employees, there's not more employees coming. Where I live in Iowa, we have shortages of psychiatrists, therapists, you name it, but so does every state around us. And it's not like I can grow a tree of psychiatrists and shake them off. You know, it's like we take care of the ones we have or we don't have more. And so that's where my heart and my passion comes from. It's like we have to help our workforce because there's not going to be more coming to save us because everybody landed. This is different. Think about when you have a tornado or a major flood in your community. They send in doctors and nurses from outside that impacted community to help you. COVID, everybody was impacted the same time. There was no extra people to come help because they were all hands on deck wherever they were. That didn't change. And so all of a sudden, there's not backup staff. There's not backup nurses. There's not backup doctors. And I think it shined a light on the fact that we've all been trying to patchwork this together, these workforce shortages. And this really amplified, hey, there's not enough of us out here to do all this work. And everybody's quitting. And you can see the numbers of people that are saying, you know, they'd give up their job tomorrow if they could. It's not a good thing. Right. It's across all industries, not just healthcare.
No, for sure. I mean, I totally get it. And it seems like there's got to be, from a policy perspective, and I guess what I mean policy from a company perspective, you could even go legislative if you wanted to go that high, but also on an individual, we have to change the paradigm. We have to change the mindset around what it means to be healthy and what it means to be a giver of health or supporting others in their health. And that it's a responsibility for everybody. And we all need to take action on it for ourselves if we're going to make any of these things change for others. It sounds like is what you're saying.
Yeah, there are some really interesting examples of some companies coming out of the pandemic with 4-day work weeks. And so I would watch for some of those. I don't know who you know or who you don't, but like Michael Hyatt, his company went to 4-day work weeks during the pandemic because everybody had kids at home plus everything that they were having going on and they just couldn't figure out how to do it. So they started doing shorter days, 4 days, and they kept it because it worked so well and they were having so much more productivity for shortening the week, which seems backwards. And so now there's lots of other groups. Amy Porterfield just announced that her company is on 4-day work week. And so there's quite a few others that are trying to, and I know Europe has had this for a very long time. America has been all about this, you know, 80-hour work week, see if we can kill ourselves. But other people are starting to see that, hey, maybe that's not the best way to do this. And so I think you're starting to see some bright spots, some businesses. I know there's others that I've seen in the news, you know, touting this 4-day work week. And it'll be fun to follow them and watch and see if they really, truly are more productive, if they can really get work done during the time that they're in the work and then really break on the times that they're not. And they're finding that being refreshed on those extra hours is really allowing them to be more creative, to bring it into the office, to be more productive. And so there's going to be a lot of people like that, I think, that we need to be watching coming forth out of this pandemic to see, you know, if that's really true, because I think that you'll start seeing maybe some other ways of doing business. And I think they're going to thrive. I think it'll be exciting to watch.
That's great. That's really good advice. And we should definitely keep an eye out for those companies. In some ways, people behave in the areas in which we are measured. And so if the holy grail of all of this is economy, it's you know, revenue and profit, as well as productivity, if that's what we're really shooting for, then I could see where an organization or an individual may say, 4-day work week isn't going to work because we're going to lose X number of revenue, and we do. Maybe we measure other things besides those things. Maybe we not only just measure productivity and profit, maybe we also measure different types of things and put a higher level of importance on it, like retention, like employee health, like, you know, the country of Bhutan starts measuring things like happiness. You know, if we don't measure those things, how do we change people's mindsets, right? And so maybe we need to put more emphasis on those things that were kind of like, yeah, it's nice to have, but maybe now retention, engagement surveys, those types of things are going to take much greater emphasis because of what you just said.
Yeah. And I'm not so sure that profitability is going to have to suffer for some of these companies. And so that's going to be the really interesting piece. If they can physically work less hours and make more money, I think you're going to really have something there for people to watch for, because I don't know that that's their intent, is to just, you know, make less profit to find all these other things. I really think that they are thinking they can still hit their numbers just with fewer days in the office. Some of my friends that do, like, you know, web host businesses that are kind of that service industry, their folks are real creative people and they can do that from anywhere. And so they may not be calling people back to an office. The office was just really for that social connection, maybe brainstorming time for projects and things, which they may still bring them in occasionally for that. But generally speaking, there are a group of people that are really great working without having to be watched over, that are just, which if nothing else, the pandemic has proven, some people really did a great job working from home this whole time. That's why businesses are still here. And so if they can, maybe that's where we should start, is like, look, your job is one that would be great at. You can do it from anywhere. So let them, not, you know, not trying to force them back into a hole in an office cubicle. If their productivity was just as high or better at home, then maybe we ought to start thinking about maybe that's where they should be. And so I think that's where it's going to take those individual conversations. And it's not going to be everybody, because some people are terrible at home employees. We all know it. Hmm. And they need to be in an office. And some people, though, you know, are good and can work from home. I mean, it's been fun to watch my husband. I pick on him a lot, but he was never an at-home worker. And so it's been fun to watch him transition. And I've worked from home over the last decade. And so for him to transition being home, it's been more interesting, because he's always been in an office. So he was kind of lost. Like, what in the world do I do? And like continuing to go back to work because it was right across the hall, you know? And I'm like, what are you doing? And so with me, I can shut my office down and I don't go back because I've practiced that for a very long time. So, you know, not everybody's the same at wanting to be in the office or whatever. And I think, though, that hope for everybody, I think that there's going to be choice now in the marketplace for more remote choices because it was so successful. So for those that really do appreciate remote, I think it's going to be a choice. And for those that are more social and want to be in an office, I think you're going to have that choice, too. I don't think, like I said, we're not going back to whatever we had before.
No, I guess you're right. Another quick question I wanted to ask you was, or maybe just throw a point out your way. I was hearing from somebody else that I was interviewing on this show a couple of days ago that those who are, well, most of the executives in organizations are coming back. It's the rest of us who are either going to stay at home or going to come back or some sort of blend. And his point was, is that there's going to be a point when those who are virtual are not going to be as important as those who are present because the executives are all present. It's almost becomes on like an unknown but unspoken class system that says,
that's interesting.
You know, and it's there's a lot of challenges with respect to how do we have a blended work environment where some people are in the office and then some people are Zooming in at the same time. And it's human nature to see that those people who are face to face with us are more important than those who aren't. And I'm curious to sort of see how that unravels and starts to become more important.
That's a really interesting point. And maybe businesses in general will do better if maybe all are all online or all in office, and maybe this blend may be more challenging. And that's a really good point because that already does exist for those that are face to face. And spend more face time. You always hear that, right? Spend more face time with the boss, more likely to get a promotion or whatever. And so that's always been a thing. And so that's a really interesting point. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And I'm not saying this is easy because I don't know how in the world you'd blend some of these jobs. I just don't know how you do it as a leader or boss. But I do know that, and maybe you don't. And maybe that's the conversation that you have with those employees for the ones that just need to be home and your business is going to need to be in person, that you part ways because that's the way it has to be. And that maybe that's the conversation. But you have to take that into account, though, because you really don't want people who prefer to work remote stuck in offices and those that want to be in offices at home. Generally speaking, that's going to be a mess. And so trying to match that and maybe that becomes something that's on the application. You know, are you a remote worker or are you an in-office worker? And we'd be more upfront about that this job this is a blend job or this is a this job or a that job. And it becomes something we outline more clearly.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see, like, once this whole COVID thing, whenever it's really done, like it's now in the distant past, it's in the rearview mirror, and working with other people face to face, shoulder to shoulder is no longer a concern. You know, we all feel healthy and safe to do that. You know, let's just hope from God that we're going to be at that place here before too long. I do wonder whether or not then will we go back to everybody at work, or will we have learned something about this virtual blended work environment that COVID has forced us to look at different ways in which to work with people and have them engage. You know, how much of that's going to stay? I mean, I don't know the answer to that, you know, but it's going to be, we'll have to see.
I agree. And I that's where my heart is. I really hope we do take the good things about this pandemic and keep them. It would be such a shame to have gone through this entire trial and not seen any of the opportunity within it and not be able to identify maybe those people who really should be working at home and it's healthier for them and healthier for the company. It would be crazy to mess all of that up. At the same time, you got to look at both sides of that issue. And so I really do hope we take the good and bring it forward, because I think that would be the entire point of what we just did this past year.
Exactly. We should never, you know, miss an opportunity from a good crisis, right? Let's learn something from all this so we don't repeat history, right?
Absolutely. Let's not do this again twice.
Yeah. Renee, it's just been great to talk to you. I mean, you obviously have a lot of knowledge and background on this whole topic. How can people, one, connect with you? And I think you'd mentioned that you have some sort of a workshop that helps people through some of these things. Tell us more about that. And also, again, how do we connect with you?
So you can connect with me on my website, and it's just my name. So it's reneeschulte.com, and I'm sure we'll put it down in the show notes for you. But on there, you can connect to my web. I have a newsletter that I send out regularly about policy that I keep people up to date on what's going on and some of the interesting takes on policy and policy changes, which during this next piece of the pandemic, who knows where that's all going to head and go. But I do often have some other courses that are also connected to my website. I do teach on self-care often, and I'm going to start a new course called Making Healthier Policies. I have decided it's my mission in life to teach people how to make better policy because or get rid of policies that are hindering people, because I've seen too many bad policies out there take down some really great people. And so really working on just in that space, making sure that we make healthier choices for all of us, because it was very important in this pandemic and it's going to continue to be important in the future.
And just to make clear, when you mean policy, you don't necessarily mean just legislative policy. You could mean a policy within a company.
Yep.
Okay. Yep.
It can be any kind of policy. So you're thinking about, I mean, you even have policies in your own home on how you do things, which probably changed during the pandemic. You know, you might have went out to eat once a week that you got to eat out no times a week for a while there. And then maybe you went to all times a week for other parts of it. And so, you know, we have policies as in rules, as in culture. That's always in the workplace. It's always at home. And it's also at your state and your national level. And so I have experience at the state level and so happy to help people walk through that. But even your community, you know, maybe you need a bike trail. And so you've got to have a strategy to make that happen.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much. It's been a real delight.
It's been nice talking to you. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.